Okay, so I'm betting that when you hear Rule 58 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, you don't exactly jump for joy, right?
Yeah, probably not the most thrilling topic at first glance.
It sounds like pure procedural, you know, the
Yeah.
kind of thing that makes your eyes glaze over a little.
Definitely. A lot of folks probably think, okay, that's for like super technical legal minds, not for me.
But here's the thing. Today we're going to prove to you that even something like Rule 58, which sounds about as dry as legal toast,
Aha, I like that legal toast.
it can actually have some pretty big implications for your future legal career. And it can reveal some really interesting things about how courts actually work in the real world.
That's right. And to show you what I mean, we're going to take a deep dive into a Supreme Court case, Bankers Trust Company versus Malice from 1978.
No, don't worry. This isn't just going to be a boring law school lecture, we promise.
We're going to break it down in a way that's actually interesting and relevant to you as a future lawyer.
Exactly. So what we're going to find in Bankers Trust is that this whole question of whether a judgment needs to be written on a separate piece of paper.
Which is what Rule 58 is all about.
Yeah, that very specific rule, it ends up getting tangled up with a pretty serious claim of securities fraud.
And this isn't just some random legal quirk.
It actually gets to the heart of what it means for a case to be truly final, and it shows how those really detailed procedural rules we have,
The ones that seem so important.
sometimes they're not applied in the most rigid way because sometimes there are bigger things at stake.
Right, and this case is a perfect example of that.
So to really get into this, we've got some great sources lined up. We've got a detailed case brief, a standard case brief.
And even some podcast guidance that highlights all the key points we should be hitting.
So we're ready to unpack all of this.
Yeah, let's dive in.
Great. So let's start with the basics. What's the story behind Bankers Trust? What was the original dispute all about?
Okay, so at its core, Bankers Trust was a securities fraud case. The plaintiffs, Samuel Malice and Franklin Kupferman, claimed that Bankers Trust, the defendant, had misled them during a stock transaction.
So we're talking about a violation of like federal securities laws, right?
You got it. Specifically, they were alleging violations under Section 10B of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. That's the big one when it comes to securities fraud.
Okay, so what exactly were Malice and Kupferman saying that Bankers Trust did wrong?
So the deal involved shares of a company called Equity National, and Malice and Kupferman were claiming that either Bankers Trust had straight up lied to them, made misrepresentations about the stock.
So, like, painted a rosier picture than reality.
Exactly. Or they were saying that Bankers Trust failed to tell them some really important information about the stock, things that they should have known before they went through with the deal.
Okay, so either lies by omission or lies by, actively making false statements.
Right. And there was also a specific issue about a certain legend that was printed on the stock certificates themselves.
A legend. Like some kind of disclaimer or something.
Yeah, something like that. It referred to an escrow agreement, and apparently that raised some red flags for Malice and Kupferman. It made them question whether everything was on the up and up.
Interesting. So this wasn't like a simple stock trade between two people.
Nope, not at all. There were actually several other parties involved in this whole transaction, which just added another layer of complexity to the case.
So we've got a stock deal gone wrong, allegations of fraud, multiple parties. Sounds complicated.
Oh, it definitely was, and it gets even more tangled from here.
Okay, so Malice and Kupferman, they felt like they'd been cheated. So what did they do? Did they go straight to court?
That's exactly what they did. They filed a lawsuit in the District Court for the Southern District of New York.
And what happened there? Did they get the justice they were looking for?
Well, not initially. The district court actually sided with Bankers Trust and dismissed the whole case.
Oh, so a loss for the plaintiffs right off the bat.
Yeah, but Malice and Kupferman, they weren't giving up that easily. They decided to appeal that decision to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals.
So they took it up a notch to the next level of the federal court system.
Exactly. And you know what? They actually won that appeal. The Second Circuit reversed the district court's decision.
Oh, wow. So a comeback victory. What was the Second Circuit's reasoning there?
Well, the Second Circuit specifically found that based on the facts of the case and the law, Malice and Kupferman actually did qualify as purchasers under Section 10B.
Ah, so they met the legal definition to bring a claim under that section of the Securities Exchange Act.
Precisely. So you'd think that would be the end of the story, right? A win at the appellate level, case closed.
Seems like a pretty clear victory.
But it wasn't over yet, not by a long shot.
Oh, there's a twist coming. I can feel it.
There is.
Yeah.
Bankers Trust decided they weren't going to take this lying down. They decided to appeal the Second Circuit's ruling all the way to the Supreme Court.
Wow, so all the way to the top.
Yep, to the highest court in the land. And it's at this point that things take a very interesting turn.
Okay, what happened at the Supreme Court? Did they just dive straight into the securities fraud arguments?
Not quite. In fact, the Supreme Court didn't even end up ruling on the actual substance of the securities fraud claim. What they got hung up on was a procedural issue.
A procedural issue.
Right.
So we're not talking about whether Bankers Trust actually committed fraud or not.
No, this was about something completely different. And this is where our friend Rule 58 comes into play. The question before the Supreme Court became whether the Second Circuit even had the authority, the jurisdiction, to hear the appeal from the district court in the first place.
Hold on. Why would the Second Circuit's authority be in question?
Because of a missing piece of paper, believe it or not.
A missing piece of paper? Seriously?
Yep. See, the district court, when it originally dismissed the case, it issued a written opinion explaining its reasoning. But it hadn't gone that extra step of creating a separate document that simply said, case dismissed. You know, just a very clear, formal statement of the judgment.
And this seemingly minor detail, this missing piece of paper, that's what threw the whole appeal into question.
That's right. And this is where Rule 58 comes in. Rule 58 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, it very clearly says that every single judgment has to be set forth on a separate document.
So not just tucked away somewhere in a longer opinion or mentioned in passing in the court records?
Nope, it has to be its own standalone document, nice and clear.
So the district court, they had the opinion, but they didn't have that distinct judgment document. Hey, I'm still trying to wrap my head around why this is such a big deal. Why does this rule even, what's the point of having a separate piece of paper?
Well, it might seem a little nitpicky, but Rule 58 actually serves a really important purpose. It was added to the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure back in 1963, specifically to address a problem that kept popping up.
Okay, what was the problem?
Basically, there was a lot of confusion about exactly when the clock starts ticking for filing an appeal. Before this rule, it wasn't always crystal clear what actually constituted the final appealable judgment of a district court.
So sometimes it was hard to know, okay, is this the moment when I have to start counting down the days to file my appeal?
Exactly. Sometimes you'd have a huge detailed opinion, and sometimes you'd just have a brief entry in the court docket. This lack of clarity led to a lot of situations where parties would miss their deadlines for filing an appeal, sometimes without even realizing it.
Ah, so they'd be out of luck because they'd miss some hidden deadline.
Pretty much. And that's not really fair, is it? So Rule 58 was put in place to fix this. It was designed to create a very bright line, a clear signal that said, this is it. This is the final decision. Now the clock starts ticking.
So it was all about making the appellate process more fair and transparent, making sure everyone knew exactly where they stood.
Exactly. It was about preventing those gotcha moments where someone loses their right to appeal because of some technicality, you know?
I see. So in the Bankers Trust case, we've got this situation where the district court made its decision, but it didn't follow that very precise procedural step of issuing a separate judgment document. And now that's what the Supreme Court has to deal with. So what did they do? Did they just say, sorry, no separate document, appeal dismissed?
Well, this is where the story gets really interesting. The Supreme Court acknowledged that, yes, Rule 58 hadn't been strictly followed, but they didn't just automatically throw out the appeal.
Oh, so they didn't take a super rigid, by-the-book approach?
Nope. In fact, they decided that under the specific circumstances of this case, the parties involved could be considered to have basically waived the separate judgment requirement.
Wait a minute, can you just waive a procedural rule like that? Especially one that seems so important for determining when an appeal is even valid.
That's a great question. And yeah, it might seem a little surprising, but the Supreme Court had some pretty strong reasons for making this decision.
Okay, I'm all ears. What were their reasons?
So first, they pointed out that the district court's opinion itself, the one they already had, it clearly showed that they intended to dismiss the case. There was no doubt about what the court was trying to do.
So the intention was clear, even without that separate document.
Right. And second, and this is a really important point, Bankers Trust, the party that was appealing to the Supreme Court, they had never objected to the Second Circuit hearing the appeal, even though that separate judgment document was missing.
So they basically went along with the whole appeal process, never raised a fuss about the paperwork.
Exactly. They actively participated in the appeal at the Second Circuit, didn't say a word about any jurisdictional problems. And to the Supreme Court, that was a big deal.
So they were kind of saying, well, you can't cry foul now when you never objected before?
Pretty much. And because everyone involved, the plaintiffs, the defendant, even the Second Circuit, they all acted like a final judgment had been entered, the Supreme Court was willing to look past this technicality.
So they were focusing on the substance of what was going on, not getting bogged down in a procedural misstep.
Exactly. They said that the main goal of Rule 58 is to prevent uncertainty about when those appeal deadlines start, not to be used as a weapon to kill an appeal based on a purely technical error, especially when everyone understood what the lower court's decision was.
Okay, that makes sense. So the Supreme Court wasn't saying that Rule 58 is unimportant, just that it shouldn't be used to block an appeal when the intention of the lower court is clear and there's no real harm done.
Precisely. It's all about context and practicality. In this case, dismissing the appeal just because of a missing piece of paper would have just caused more delays and potentially prevented the whole point of an appeal, which is to actually review the decision itself.
To get to the heart of the matter. So it seems like the Supreme Court was trying to strike a balance between following the rules and achieving a fair outcome.
Absolutely. And this actually brings us to a really important legal distinction. The Supreme Court decided that Rule 58 is what's called a non-jurisdictional claim processing rule.
Okay, now that sounds complicated. What does that mean?
Basically, it means that it's a rule that helps things run smoothly, but it doesn't actually determine whether a court has the fundamental power to hear a case.
So it's important, but it's not a deal breaker.
Right. The Supreme Court said that because of this, Rule 58 can be waived by the parties involved, like it was in this case. But if we're talking about a true jurisdictional defect, something that goes to the very heart of a court's authority, well, those usually can't be waived.
Okay, I think I'm starting to get it. So it's like, Rule 58 is important for keeping things organized and fair, but it shouldn't be used as a technicality to shut down an appeal when everyone knows what the lower court decided and no one's been unfairly disadvantaged by the missing document.
You got it. That's the key takeaway here.
So I know this is a law student-focused podcast.
Of course, yeah.
So let's talk directly to our listener for a second. Why should a law student care about this case? What can we learn from Bankers Trust?
Okay, future lawyers, listen up, because this case has some really valuable lessons for you. First of all, it shows that while those procedural rules, they are super important, like they're the backbone of our legal system.
They keep everything running smoothly and make sure everyone's playing by the same rules.
Right, but they're not always applied in a totally rigid, robotic way. Courts are going to look at the situation, they're going to use common sense, and they're not going to toss out a whole appeal just because of a small technical error, especially when the intent of the lower court's decision is crystal clear and no one's been treated unfairly because of the mistake.
So it's like, yeah, you got to dot your I's and cross your T's, but sometimes the pursuit of justice has to take priority over a strict, hyper-technical reading of the rules.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court, they're saying that sometimes the spirit of the rules, the idea of making sure everyone gets a fair chance on appeal, that can be more important than the letter of the law, especially when everyone understood what was going on.
Okay, that's a really important point. So even though those fine details matter, the legal system isn't just about blindly following procedures. It's about making sure that justice is served in the end.
Right. And I think that's something that a lot of law students and even some lawyers sometimes forget.
So it's a good reminder to keep the big picture in mind.
For sure. But, and this is a big but, the fact that waiver was possible in this case, it doesn't mean you can just be careless with those procedural requirements.
So don't go thinking you can just skip steps and everything will be fine.
No, no, no. Always, always make sure those judgments are properly documented. Follow Rule 58 to the letter and make sure you're following all those other procedural rules too.
Because if you don't,
you're just asking for trouble. You could face challenges to your appeals, cause unnecessary delays, and basically create a whole lot of headaches for yourself and your clients.
So yeah, dot those I's and cross those T's, even if it feels a little tedious.
Absolutely. And here's a practical tip. Always check the court docket to make absolutely sure that a separate judgment has actually been entered. It'll save you a lot of grief down the road.
Great advice. So anything else we can learn from Bankers Trust? Any other wisdom to impart to our eager law students?
Yeah, I think there's another really important lesson here, and it has to do with, well, how you play the game, so to speak.
Okay. I'm intrigued. What do you mean by that?
Well, the Supreme Court's decision in Bankers Trust, it kind of suggests that they don't look too kindly on lawyers who try to exploit every little procedural misstep by the other side.
So don't be that lawyer who's constantly looking for technicalities to trip people up.
Right. especially when those technicalities don't really affect the fairness of the case. If it's clear what the lower court meant to do and the other side just made a little mistake, trying to use that to shut down an appeal might not win you any points with the judges.
So it's like, pick your battles, right? Focus on the substance of the case, not on trying to score points by being super picky about procedure.
That's a good way to put it. And remember, Bankers Trust, they didn't object to the appeal at the Second Circuit. They participated like everything was fine. And because of that, they kind of lost their right to complain about the missing paperwork later on.
So it's kind of like, you snooze, you lose.
In a way, yeah. And I think this reinforces the idea that legal practice should really be about the merits of the case. You know, who's right and who's wrong, not about getting bogged down in hyper-technical arguments that don't really change the big picture.
So fight fair, focus on the substance, and don't be afraid to let those minor technicalities slide if they're not really hurting anyone.
That's the spirit of it, yeah.
Now, before we wrap things up, there's one more interesting detail about the Bankers Trust case itself that I want to mention.
Okay, what's that?
So remember, the whole reason this case went to the Supreme Court was because Bankers Trust appealed the Second Circuit's decision.
Right. They wanted the Supreme Court to overturn that ruling.
Exactly. But here's the thing. While the Supreme Court was busy figuring out this whole jurisdictional mess with Rule 58, they actually ended up dismissing the writ of certiorari.
Okay, just for our listeners who might not be familiar with that term, a writ of certiorari, that's basically the Supreme Court saying, yeah, we'll hear your case.
Exactly. So they dismissed it as improvidently granted.
Meaning they decided they shouldn't have taken the case in the first place.
And this was all because of something that happened during the oral arguments before the Supreme Court. The lawyer for the respondents, Malice and Kupferman, they changed their position on a key legal issue.
Oh, so that threw a wrench in the whole thing.
Big time. And because of that, the Supreme Court basically said, you know what, this case is too messy now. We're not going to get into the weeds of the securities fraud claim.
So all that debate about Rule 58, it was kind of for nothing.
Well, not exactly. Remember, the Supreme Court decided that the Second Circuit did have jurisdiction to hear the appeal. And because the Supreme Court dismissed the case, the Second Circuit's ruling, the one that was favorable to Malice and Kupferman, that remained in effect. So in a way, the Supreme Court's willingness to be flexible on that procedural issue with Rule 58, it actually cleared the way for the case to continue moving forward.
And for the plaintiffs to ultimately have their claims heard.
Which is exactly what happened. Hmm. After the Supreme Court dismissed the case, it was sent back down to the lower courts.
Tell me they won.
They did. Malice and Kupferman ended up winning on the merits of their securities fraud claim in later trials.
Wow, that's amazing. So they finally got the justice they were fighting for all along.
They did. And this really highlights the real-world impact of that seemingly minor procedural rule, Rule 58. If the Supreme Court had taken a strict approach and dismissed the Second Circuit's jurisdiction because of that missing piece of paper, well, Malice and Kupferman might never have had the chance to fully present their case and get a ruling in their favor.
So that one procedural detail had the potential to completely change the outcome of the whole case.
Absolutely. And Bankers Trust, it didn't just fade into obscurity after it was decided. This case has actually had a lasting impact on the legal world.
I'd imagine so. It really delves into some fundamental questions about procedural rules and how courts should apply them.
It does. Yeah. And in fact, Bankers Trust is often cited in legal discussions about the concept of waiver. It's a really important case for understanding when procedural requirements can be waived and what factors courts consider when making those decisions.
And for those of you who like to go really deep, I've got a little extra tidbit for you.
Lay it on me.
Bankers Trust is sometimes mentioned in connection with a later case, Hamer versus Neighborhood Housing Services. That case basically reinforced the idea that certain procedural rules can be waived under the right circumstances.
So it built on the foundation laid by Bankers Trust.
Exactly. And there's another interesting thing about the Bankers Trust decision. The Supreme Court issued what's called a per curiam opinion in that case.
Just to clarify for our listeners, a per curiam opinion, that's an opinion that's issued on behalf of the whole court without a specific author named.
Right. And some legal scholars have suggested that this might reflect the influence of Justice Stevens, who was on the court at the time.
Wasn't Justice Stevens known for being pretty pragmatic and focused on efficiency?
Exactly. And there's definitely a sense of pragmatism running through the Bankers Trust opinion. It's like the court was saying, let's not get lost in the technicalities. Let's focus on what's fair and just.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about securities fraud, Rule 58, the concept of waiver, jurisdictional issues, and even a little bit about Justice Stevens' judicial philosophy.
A pretty good overview, I'd say.
But for our listener, the busy law student trying to make sense of all this, what's the core message of Bankers Trust? What's the one thing they should really take away from this case?
I think the most important takeaway is this. Procedural rules, they're crucial. They keep our legal system functioning properly.
They provide structure, predictability, fairness.
Absolutely. But they shouldn't be applied in such a rigid, inflexible way that they actually prevent justice from being done.
So it's not just about following the rules blindly. It's about understanding the purpose behind those rules and making sure they're serving their intended function.
Exactly. And Bankers Trust is a perfect example of this principle in action. It shows us that when the intention of a lower court is clear and no one's been harmed by a minor procedural misstep, the separate document requirement of Rule 58, well, it can be waived.
And that flexibility is important because it protects the right to appeal and ensures that cases can be decided on their merits, not on technicalities.
Precisely. It's all about making sure that the legal system actually works for the people it's supposed to serve.
And that's a really important perspective for any future lawyer to keep in mind.
Agreed. You know, this case actually brings up a really interesting question that I think is worth pondering for all you legal eagles out there.
Okay, I'm listening. Hit me with your final thought.
So think about this. We have these procedural rules to make sure things are fair and predictable, but we also need flexibility in the system to make sure that justice is done in individual cases. How do we find the right balance between those two goals?
The age-old tension between rules and justice.
Exactly. And it's something that every lawyer has to grapple with at some point. When does a technical error actually matter enough to change the outcome of a case? And when is it just a hurdle that can be overcome in the pursuit of a just result? It's something to think about as you continue your legal journey.
Food for thought, indeed. Well, thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive into Bankers Trust Malice.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time.
See you on the next deep dive.